Hey everybody, it's your old pal Merlin, visiting with you again for a unprecedented second day in a row. Well, it's not unprecedented. There's I think probably some precedents, but it's rare precedents. But here I am again. I made a video yesterday, and part of the reason that I wanted to visit with you again is to say thank you to those of you who think I've lost my mind.
Anytime you want to simulate having a giant cock,
It's been kind of weird and warm.
Ah, it's just coming right out of there.
And weird. But I've got a lot of notes from people who think saw the video yesterday.
Literally take the cat litter that you are using for your cat to poop on.
And I don't know if they don't get that I was doing a bit, or they think that it's a bit that represents that I lost my mind.
Why would you use a regular screwdriver? If you've got a quarter, that's a terrific hack. But
thank you very much. It is very sweet of you to worry about my mental health, but I think I'm okay. You know, there's that thing in Catch-22 where, you know, if you say you're sane, you know, well then obviously you're sane and you should fly. Or you say you're insane. Well, you're saying you're insane. That proves that you're sane, and therefore you should also fly. So, you know, it's like drunk driving. You really shouldn't let these folks decide whether they're, you know, in a position to drive. But and yet here I am. I'm not drunk, and that I'm aware of. But it's been sweet, and to my friend Anil, thank you very much for the career advice. That's thank you for taking the time to do that. It's very sweet. But so anyway, this video that I made yesterday, the reason I'm here with you today, apart from trying to assuage the fears of my friends, is to explain kind of not precisely like why I did that, but kind of what brought me to that, because it is germane. That video, well, it got made for two reasons. The small reason and the obvious reason is that I like to give my friends at Lifehacker a hard time because their site is frequently pretty bad. And the other day, they did have a post about how if you've got pots and pans that are really, you know, stubborn, hard to clean, you should use dish soap and hot water and soak them overnight. So they had a tip about using dish soap to clean your pots and pans. And, you know, I thought that was funny. So yes, that is one reason that I made that, because they do a lot of stuff like that. They had one that was about how to churn butter. They had another one recently. You can look these up. They're all up. There was another one about how to clean your debit card, you know, which was handy for me because I feel like I can't even tell you how often, you know what, I can't even show you. My debit card is so dirty. I don't even want to have anybody in. But you know what? The reason that video ultimately got made was not obvious unless you were really watching carefully. And that's that a certain disposition about fake self-help has been on my mind lately. I won't say it's obsessing me precisely, but it's definitely been on my mind because in a way that I hope I can explain in the next little while, it very much goes to some ideas that I'm trying to write about for this Inbox Zero book. And for some reason, I guess, I did kind of snap when I saw the thing about, you know, using dishwashing liquid to clean your dishes. And there's a funny thing that happens. This is not a defense. It's not a defense, and it's not even a footnote. It's not an explanation, I hope. It might be an explanation. There's this funny thing that happens. There are a lot of people in the world, in a lot of different professions, but particularly on the internet, there are a lot of people who don't start making money until you briefly forget who you are. Right? I don't know if that makes sense on the face of it, but it's something I think about a lot. If you think about anything having to do with, you know, advertising, or you think of anything, gosh, buying a magazine even, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but I have a theory that things like procrastination, things like, you know, kind of anxiety about work, all of these things that we, negative feelings that are associated with the stuff that we kind of know we need to do on some level, comes from a lack of confidence about one of three things. Either one, we've temporarily kind of forgotten who we are and who we want to be. We've temporarily lost track of what we should be paying attention to, you know, kind of what should get our attention. And three, we lose track of what our options are for doing something about either of the first two, right? I don't know if that, you may not agree with me, you know, that's fine, but it's a theory that I have. And when I say forgetting who you are, playing with a Q-tip, when I say forgetting who you are, I'm not saying like, you know, having a complete nervous breakdown. But think about this. Think about the fact that when you check your email, for example, in the morning, you're checking your email on some level because you need to know what you need to know about. You need to make decisions about what to do about it. But on some level, especially if you're a knowledge worker, you're checking email to figure out who you have to be today, right? A knowledge worker has to figure out his or her own job every day and then do something about it. The second part is important. You can't just figure out your job. You have to also do something about it. And so what do? You ask the world for answers. You sit there and you're, whether you're procrastinating or you're not sure, some part of you says, I need more of something to figure out what I should do today. And that sends us out doing things like checking email, things we have to do, right? You've got to check your mailbox. You've got to check your inbox. You've got to go to meetings. There are ways in which it would be difficult for you to continue doing what you do without a certain kind of set of new information to help you figure that stuff out. Is this making any sense? Possibly, right? You know, think about your expertise. Think about if you have any kind of a job as a knowledge worker, right? And by a knowledge worker, you understand what I mean. It's like, you know, you're not a plumber or a nurse. Even nurses, gosh, there's certainly a giant amount of knowledge work to that. But it isn't like you're, you know, sorting, you know, nuts and bolts for a living. Your job as a nut and bolt sorter is to basically make sure you don't, you know, unintentionally mix up the wrong nuts and bolts. But how do you know things like whose call you should return first? How do you know what meeting, if you had to, you could blow off this week? How do you know that putting this number in the Excel cell is better than putting that number in the Excel cell? And the answer is you're a knowledge worker. You're somebody who over the years has acquired a lot of expertise based on experience, trial and error, seeing different things work and not work. And you're not a monkey. You're not a monkey, you're not a robot, you're not a shell script. Because, let's be honest, if they could have one of those doing your job, they wouldn't need to be paying your, you know, health insurance, right? I mean, you're nice enough, but, right? And so we have to go out and find that information. And so I think what happens is, for better or for worse, right? A part of us goes, I'm not sure what to do next. If I really knew who I was, if I really knew what I should be paying attention to, and if I really knew what my options were and I'd made a decision about what to do about all of that, I wouldn't need that much input from anybody else except to just basically fill, you know, kind of connect the dots. What time is the meeting? When is this due? Those kinds of questions. I think procrastination happens when we fall apart on those things and aren't really sure how to proceed. And so what do? We ask the world for answers, right? If you don't have enough information right now to solve a problem or to make a decision about something, you start looking around. Maybe you talk to friends. Maybe you sort of, you get where I'm going with this, though. You sort of consciously, overtly decide to gather new information from inside of your kind of problem domain to decide what to do about it, right? Or, as is so often the case with somebody like me, sometimes I just need to not be doing this one thing. I just need to go do something else, right? Isn't it a strange thing that you meet these people who can do lots of things and be very productive, and they still somehow find time to do things like play, you know, a can of Balt or, you know, make a dumb video for the internet? I mean, obviously, I'm not a perfect example of this, but my friend Michael Lopp, who does that site Rands and Repose, he talks about this a lot. It's very important to him in his process to sit in his little kind of geek cave and be able to oscillate between heads down on something for a little while and then paying attention to something over here for a little while. And they end up informing each other. Even if he's just watching some dumb movie on TV, he knows the right mix. But here's what makes him a pro, is he never forgets who he is and what he needs to do. And he knows at some point he's got to go back to heads down, right? It isn't like he's sitting in a hotel room and, you know, Rands turns on the cable and there's like a Discovery show about ice fishing that he finds very engrossing. And he ends up watching, you know, like any of those things, they'll show five in a row. So he watches five in a row. He's learning all about ice fishing. I'm not sure why I'm talking about ice fishing, right? But wow, this is really interesting. And while he's watching that, he's checking Wikipedia to learn more about ice fishing. He's reading and reading and reading about ice fishing, right? you know, until really he kind of feels like he's maybe the most giant expert on ice fishing, you know, maybe in his entire area, you know. I don't think he does that probably, you know, because he doesn't really want to be an ice fisherman. And he understands that if he did, for the sake of argument, want to be an ice fisherman, there's only so much reading about it that he could do before he would actually have to go out on the ice, you know, put on a couple extra layers and fish. But he doesn't. It's a little bagatelle, a little something he's enjoying for a while before he gets back to the work that he has over here. Stay with me. Not sure who you are, not sure what you need to know, not sure what you need to do about it. And so you start looking for answers. Now you get that this can be a good or a bad thing, or it can be a neutral thing. It can be a great thing because, my gosh, how much have I talked about this? How much has every person who talks about creativity talked about this? You've got to be very open and generative at certain times. You've got to just let the world give you stuff, and you've got to just go read books, even if you're not sure why you're reading it. You know, sometimes you just need to go dick around, right? And then sometimes you have to know when to put your head down and just really work hard. And the people who are able to get that mix right end up being really happy. And they end up, what I've learned in that instance, is it really giving myself permission to do that means that while I'm here in my squalid little office for a few hours, I do something and I work really hard, and then I can go home and on a good day, I go and I play with my daughter without having to think about the work, because I've given myself permission to do that. I don't have to sneak in little bits of work because I feel comfortable that I've cut it off. And that really means, on some level, understanding who you are, where your attention should go, and what you should do about it. But here's the thing. The downside of tacitly asking the world to tell you who you are is that there are a lot of things, people, internet properties, businesses that thrive on finding people who don't know who they are and then telling them over and over and over again who they could be, what they could pay attention to, and what they could do about it as a result, right? This is not a bad thing, right? You don't yell at Rolling Stone magazine because they have too many record reviews. Well, you know, be an adult. You don't have to buy every record. That's why they have reviews, right? It's very cynical to just yell at a website or an anything for making too much stuff, because if you're an adult, you should be able to govern that, right? I'm criticized by people because, of the apparent hypocrisy of posting things on Twitter. I mean, I've written 25,000 words of a book so far. I don't talk about it because, who cares? But, I've written a lot of a book, and I still find time to be on Twitter because I'm doing what Michael does. I'm oscillating. I'm oscillating between putting my head down over here, and I'm oscillating with dicking around over here. I mean, I'm sorry that I have to, explain it in those terms. I would hope people could intuit that, but it's not always obvious when you're working. And believe me, when you're a writer, that's really the case. Sometimes writing is reading. Sometimes writing is taking a walk. And sometimes writing is just feeling really bad about what you're doing for a little while. It's a very weird process. But it's got this built-in idea. This is an excuse or an apology, but you get this, right? There are very productive people who dick around all day long, you know? There's companies, I'm sure, who employ people that they give them $1 million a year, you know, to have a $10 billion idea every 5 years. They do a lot of dicking around. You know, the higher up in your expertise you go, the more it's very difficult to explain to people how you make any of these decisions. But let's look at the downside of that. Or not even the downside, let's look at the potential dark side. If you are in search of a break, and you are in search of getting away for a while. Now for me, yeah, maybe that could be reading. That might be, God, I look at stuff like Hacker News. I look at stuff like Wikipedia. Christ knows, if you look at my stupid blog, how much of the day I spend looking at stuff on YouTube. How much of the day I spend reloading Favorite, right? I'm not actually that interested in who likes me. It's just this weird little gesture that I do when I'm thinking about what I'm writing. It's really self-involved. It doesn't harm anybody. But it's still part of what I do. It's not productive, but it's just a thing that I do. Think about, I don't have anything good nearby. But think about how much stuff you have, on your desk, that you end up just playing with. You ever thought about this? All those little things. You ever notice you go around a bunch of engineers and programmers, and they're all like they're throwing bean bags and shit and just hanging out, and you go, gosh, that doesn't seem very productive. Well, if you've ever, you know, managed engineers and knowledge workers, you know that that doesn't look productive, but it can be very, very productive. And this is why I'm very into this idea of play. There's this guy, Stuart Brown. You can Google him. And Stuart Brown is very, if you like, serious about play. He's written a book called Play, and he has started, I think it's called the Play Institute. And it's all about where he's trying to get people, he's kind of trying to socialize this idea that, it's a very John Cleese-esque idea of saying that, hey, look, you know, this is not just about, you know, whiteboarding at an offsite and like, you know, taking a retreat. It's about, in order to be creative, in order to make new things, we have to not make everything we do a perilous threat. We have to build in a lot of this kind of generative attitude about doing stuff that's not precisely related to doing something productive. And he takes all these examples from nature. Some of the stuff is a little squirrely. Some of the stuff he does with Charles Whitman, the Austin sniper, I think is a little odd. Google it. But he did a TED Talk a while back that I really recommend. I'll link to it from here. And he has this quote that I don't have in front of me, but he says something along the lines of...
human hand in manipulation of objects is the hand in search of a brain. The brain is in search of a hand, and play is the medium by which those two are linked in the best way.
Probably mangle that, but it really struck me because you think about how when you're talking to somebody and you're doing things and you're, right? Or you think about when you're with your family at the holidays and alcohol and playing cards are all that keep you from killing each other. Think about Sudoku. Think about Game Boy, right? There's all these little things where you just kind of move your hands a little bit and make small decisions, and it becomes very engrossing. I think when we're doing that a lot of the time, that's giving our physical body enough of a distraction that our brain doesn't have to edit. Does that make sense? You're basically giving yourself permission to say, I'm going to sit and like play with this rubber band while my brain tries to figure out how creative people stay employed for 40 years or whatever. There's a natural, necessary need for play, for this generative attitude of saying, I'm going to be okay with the fact that what I'm doing right now is, in my case, you know, not typing words with my hands that equal a book. But the dark side can also be not knowing when to stop asking the world to help you figure out who you are. Not knowing when to stop asking the world to tell you what to pay attention to or what your options are for doing anything about it. Because like I said, there are people out there who will not start making money until you're in that state, until you're in the state of not being sure what to do next. And this isn't just for folks with ADD. This is not just for people who are not particularly bright, or it's not just for people who are not mindful Buddhists. It's for anybody who discovers they can be really easily distracted by something that's easier to get a hook into than it is to really kind of explain as part of what you need to be doing, right? Sometimes we catch ourselves doing this when we feel really bad. We say, oh, you know, I'm spending too much time dicking around on Facebook, or sometimes I'll go, oh God, I've been messing around with YouTube for hours. And then you make corrections, I think, most of the time. But why did I make that mean video yesterday? Well, first of all, I thought it was pretty funny. You know, there's no accounting for taste, but I'm really worried. I'm really worried about the fake help industry. And it's one reason that I struggle with what to make this book into. And it's one reason that I am taking my time doing it to make sure I do it in the way that I want. I really worry about a world in which all of our levels of expertise tends to get stuck at what the Dreyfus brothers have called being an advanced beginner. So I learned about this through Andy Hunt, who wrote he's one of the pragmatic programmer guys. He has a wonderful book where he talks about this thing called the Dreyfus model of skills acquisition. And this sounds really obvious, but I think it's not. And it's basically the notion that in order to learn any kind of an external skill, we have to pass through these five stages in order. You start as nothing. You start not knowing what you don't know about things you don't know about. You become a novice, then you become an advanced beginner, and all the way up to becoming an expert, or eventually what you might call a master. So what's interesting about this is, so just as an example, let's say the example everybody always gives is cooking. Actually, also props to Sean Hussey for giving me a lot of help with this. he's going to get an acknowledgement in the book. If you decide you want to start cooking, you could go out and just, like, the first thing you do, try and go and make a souffle. But chances are, if you've never been in a kitchen before, maybe you're going to boil soup, right? I mean, that's a kind of cooking. You're going to sit down, you're going to open up the Progresso, pop the top off, pour it in, and read the, like, 8-word description of how to make this into food. If you can follow that, then you can be a novice. Congratulations, right? Most of us, when we're really, really beginning with something, we know we suck at it, right? We are acutely aware of how much we don't know, and that's why, for example, we get really thrown off with, for example, a recipe that says a pinch, if you're not sure what a pinch is. You get really thrown off by any kind of directions that are not... I could give you another example. Anytime I do anything having to do with Unix, like a tutorial or something like that, I'm trying to install software, I go to something like Dan Benjamin's site to learn how to update Rails, and I basically do a lot of copying and pasting from a web page into the terminal. Right? I don't really know Bash. I don't really know Rails. What I know is copying and pasting, and that's a novice. An advanced beginner is somebody who's moved a little bit past that, to where they have moved maybe just beyond recipes. Now they're doing things like they're flipping through the table of contents, they're jumping to the index. They know how to find what they need to know to do a thing in a context, but they don't have a big overview of the problem domain like someone who's considered the next level competent or all the way up to being an expert. Do you follow? So why is this interesting? Well, first of all, I think it's interesting because A, there are a lot of people who are, let's be honest, advanced beginners on a topic. Anybody can become an advanced beginner on something in an afternoon, thanks to Wikipedia, you know, and like Stack Overflow. God bless it. Great site. But are you really an expert? I mean, how many people on the internet who call themselves experts in a programming language have, gosh, even shipped something, let alone had to solve the same problem in 10 different ways, 10 different contexts? You become an expert by doing something for a really, 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 really long time. You don't do it by declaring yourself to be an expert. And so what's the second part? Well, from novice all the way up to expert, I think this is so interesting. Every level of expertise has a necessary level of blindness, right? At the lowest level, as a pre-novice, you don't even know what you don't know. Once you become a novice or, you know, a beginner, you understand that there's a whole bunch of stuff that you don't really know yet. And when you become an advanced beginner is where things get interesting, because that is where you start feeling like you know what you're doing. And you start kind of assuming that you know maybe more than you do. I believe the term for this, I might get this wrong, but I believe the term for this is second order ignorance. It's the idea of, it's Kotke linked to this a while back. It's just this idea of you don't know as much as you think you do. Right? And I think a lot of us, and I think actually Andy Hunt says as much, a lot of us end up getting stuck at the advanced beginner level of a problem because we think we've basically got really fast training wheels, right? And we've learned how to go out and get faster and faster training wheels. So we've gotten really fast at looking things up in a book, but we really haven't made that giant leap to becoming truly competent at something, where we understand enough about the problem domain to be able to go out and do interesting things. But there's a certain blindness to that. Now, a certain blindness to being an expert, how could you be? Well, my best example of this I can think of the blindness of being an expert, is imagine we've got a butcher shop down the street from here, streetcar. I'm sorry this is so long, this is how it works. We got a streetcar, we got a butcher shop down the street from here that's been open for like 40 years. Some of those guys have been butchers their whole life, and I always imagine the conversation when a new guy comes in, right, who's learned enough to not cut his thumb off, but he doesn't know that much about the business. And, he yells out to the guy who's been there for 40 years. He goes, hey, we need, 2.5 pounds of pastrami. And this very old man is a little bit shaky. He goes, he goes, okay, 2.5 pounds. Boom. And the new butcher goes, what? Come on. How do you know that? 2.5 pounds? And the old guy goes, weigh it. He does. He puts it on there. It's exactly 2.5 pounds. So the new guy goes, okay, stop. How do you know that was exactly 2.5 pounds? That's completely crazy. And the expert The old butcher says what most experts say. He says, I have no idea. I don't know how I know that. I just do. I can't tell you how. And the young guy goes, okay, whatever, old man. What's the trick? What is the trick? How did you know that was 2.5 pounds? Because you know what the trick is? Be a butcher for 40 years. That's the trick. That's how you become an expert. You become an expert by doing something for a really long time and weighing so much roast beef that even when you can't explain to people how you know it's 2.5 pounds, you somehow know. Now, just quickly, one final side note here. The distinction between an expert and a master in one version of this is that a master is somebody who is above the expert, just especially in the sense of being able to help anybody at any stage with understanding how to move up and to really explain how I know that that's 2.5 pounds, maybe. Right? Does that make any sense? I think it has, being a master has more to do with being able to really gauge where somebody is. And I got this straight from Sean Hussey. But you can't really be a good teacher of something until you know how much you know about something. And then second, how much the people that you're trying to teach know about something, right? Because if you're actually an advanced beginner and you fancy yourself to be an expert or a master, and you don't have any idea what your audience knows, well, you're not going to be a very good teacher because you kind of can't be. You don't even know which level of textbook to bring out, right? Okay, this is going on. I'll try to wrap this up, but probably won't. Here's the problem. At the level of advanced beginner, you get a new set of problems because it does feel like you know stuff about stuff. And now, getting back to the earlier point, if you do get to a place where you go, I'm not sure who I am today, I'm not sure what I should pay attention to, and I'm not sure what my options are for doing anything about it, I think it's not unusual at all for somebody at the advanced beginner level to end up doing things like going to the internet for advice. Not just to go kind of look up a Wikipedia article, not just to go check in on something, you know, from a journal, but to really find yourself being drawn along by all of these very engaging, but mostly nutritionally empty lists of tips and little posts and little nacho chips of information that are really, really addictive, right? And let's be honest, folks, there is a science to this stuff. I know this. I used to be able to make a really good headline for a story by having it start with a prime number numeral. You tell people that there's 7 ways to do something, people are going to read that because they understand it's already been cut up for them into the right pieces. Is that a bad thing, having posts like that? Having self-help sites? Having a site with 34 ways to give a hug? You know, or a site about, you know, how to use dish liquid. Is that a bad thing? Not really. You know, the internet's great because it's open. More power to you. What's not great is you don't have an old butcher. There's nobody who's really stepping in at one of those sites to periodically check in with you and say, how are you doing? Are you getting what you need? Can I help you with making some of the decisions that show you where to spend a lot of time, and then maybe show you kind of where you don't need to spend a lot of time? Because that's really what a mentor is, right? That's really what a master becomes, is somebody who has the kind of existential heuristics for helping you not waste your time on stuff that's dumb, right? I mean, how many times have you, like, tried to solve a problem, and you get so wound up in it that you lose track, and you go to the wizard, and the wizard goes, have you thought about it this way? I don't think those sites give you that. And I think there is a disincentive for those sites to tell you to go back to work. There's a disincentive for any of these self-help sites and any of these sites that rely on you visiting over and over and over. There's a built-in disincentive to telling you when you should leave. It's something I've struggled with. It's one reason that I'll probably post this on 43 Folders because I haven't posted anything there for a while. But you know, I've gotten it from both sides. I've gotten from people who demand that I post more, and I've gotten from people who go, oh, you know, well, you used to do this stuff too. Well, you know, if we all run our life by fear of hypocrisy, then really, how are we better than, like, sea anemones, you know, and pine trees? We have to learn and evolve, and I've learned that I didn't want to do that anymore. I don't fault people for doing it, but I do fault them for pretending that it is truly helpful at getting past anything like an advanced beginner level. Because if you want to be the old butcher, or you want to be the wizard, or you want to be the guy who really, or woman who has seen that stuff from every angle, you know what you got to do? You got to turn that shit off and sit down and work. You know, there's one piece of advice in every writing book, you know, apart from, you know, running spell check. Pour some glue on your chair and sit down. Because that's where it happens. You eventually have to type. You know, in my case, even if I'm not typing, I know if I'm sitting down and writing on index cards, you know, I'm still getting closer to a book. It's not a defense, but it is a way of saying, you do need to figure all this stuff out. And the one piece of advice I really will give you, be circumspect about who you allow to tell you who you are, what you need to pay attention to, and what your options are for doing something about it. And anytime that somebody is trying to help you programmatically, a stranger programmatically trying to help you over and over and over and over, ask yourself what they get out of it, right? If you see this, what I'll get out of it is, wow, I got to think out loud about this for a while and it helps my book, and some ads will load over here for the deck, which is a really nice ad network. They're super cool. But I mean, it's not purely altruistic, but you know what, dude? You don't know me. You don't know me. If this advice is useful to you, it's useful to you because you're smart enough to suss out that there are charlatans and carpetbaggers who are actively trying to get you to not do what you need to do. And in the same way that you can keep a cat, a kitten, for as long as you treat it like a baby, you can treat your audience like a baby and have them keep coming back over and over and over for that same information titty. So, you know, I'm a dick about this stuff because I think somebody needs to be a dick about this stuff. I'm not trying to be the marshal, and I'm not trying to tell people to go not have fun. What I am saying is, don't imagine that you're building expertise if what you're really doing is just kind of unwinding, right? Think about Sudoku. Think about your Game Boy. Think about how fun it is to just move your hands a little bit and make small decisions. Hitting post, hitting reload, all of those things, it's really fun. And it's really necessary. That's the weird paradox. It is necessary to do whatever it is you need to do to get away from your work sometimes, or to get away from whatever your problems. Nothing wrong with any of that. I just think it really does matter to become aware of the incredibly cynical nature of somebody trying to pretend to help you and thinking that nobody can tell. That, to me, is the true cynicism. The true cynicism is somebody who can keep a straight face when you point out that they make a living from repeatedly getting you to not do your work. And every time you look at a list of 5,000 to-do list applications, every time you find out 700 new ways to open Firefox or 16 new ways to store your dish liquid, ask yourself, what are you going to do with that? How is that helping you figure out who you are today? What you need to pay attention to? And what you might potentially do about it. And finally, how will you know when you're done? How will you know when those questions have been satisfactorily answered to a comfort level where you can go and do what you need to do? How's this about email? Well, one way it's about email is you have to say, how much of this can I tolerate? You know, when I'm checking for email, for example, am I doing it just because I'm really anxious about what might be there? What is it that I think is going to be there when I look? And do I have the time and the inclination to do anything about it if there is something there? I've talked about a lot of things today. It's partly in the service of saying that's why I made a douche video that I thought was funny. But it's also in the service of saying, if you care about stuff like Inbox Zero and you really care about being a productive and whole human, you're going to have to start making some really, really hard decisions about who's allowed to repeatedly tell you who you are. I'm not telling you who you should be. I'm just telling you to watch out for the people who want to do that. They're not always bad people, and they don't even realize what they're doing. Gosh, who could ever be more butt hurt than an SEO? Someone whose whole job, a search engine optimization people, a lot of these people are just scoundrels. And what they do for a living is they take people who failed in a meritocracy and then help them cheat. And then they get all mad because they tell us how much they're helping the world. Well, I use Google, right? And
when SEOs go out there and give all this advice about how to become a good SEO with good SEO and good PageRank, and the social media people get out and they talk about how to become a social media person by talking about social media inside of social media and getting people in social media to follow you, you know, the snake is not only not, there's not even a snake. There's no tail. There's no snake. There's no nothing. There's no nothing. There's just pure recursion. And I should go. But I guess I wanted to leave you with that. And, you know, I apologize if I hurt people's feelings. And I apologize if some of the things that I say can sometimes seem a little caustic. But I think this shit matters. I think it really matters. You know, I like making funny stuff. I agree with Stuart Brown. I think there's times you just got to go dick around. You know? But you've also really got to know when to pull it back. The biggest skill that you can take away from this stuff, if you do decide to buy this book, if I ever finish it, I think one of the biggest things that you can take away from it is none of these systems are going to save you. There's no diagram. There's no system. There's no pen. There's no notebook. There's no nothing. It's harrowing. This is some Kierkegaard-level shit going on. It's you're going to have to figure out who you are every day, right? This is not a Richard Scarry book. You don't get a hat and, like, now you're a fireman. You're going to have to figure out who you are as a worker, as a person, as a spouse, as a parent, as a kid, as a site visitor. You're going to have to figure out who you are. And I want you to keep that in mind, because those folks are not going to keep it in mind for you. They're not bad people, but the nature of what they do requires them to not tell you when you're done. And that's all I wanted to say. I'm working on this book. It's coming along. You know, it would be easier if I just wrote a book about email, I have to admit, but you know, if you've made it all the way to this part, then you get why I don't want it to just be about email, because I think there's something more important here. But anyway, sorry to be so serious, but I swear to God, I'm sane. Fly open like a portcullis. I'm a little long-winded, but I am sane. I have been Merlin, and this has been me talking to my computer for a while. It's now 75.7 degrees Fahrenheit in my office, and I hope I'll see you again soon. I want to do more of these videos because it helps me a lot, and I hope you have good luck today figuring out who you want to be. See you next time.